CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is Wednesday morning, the 18th of January already, halfway through the first month of the year and some. And I got lots to get to still. I got a couple of cool emails that I want to talk about in a moment or two. And we've got this really interesting interview, which I think you're going to love, with LJ Fenter, which we've got in probably about 15, 16 minutes from now. So stick around for that and a whole lot more. Lebang is with us. She's in the studio in Johannesburg. We are moving house, Cliff Central. We're going to be in our new premises by hopefully the 1st of February, maybe even a little bit before then if we can do it, which means we're starting the year with a bang. So there's a lot happening.
So much.
A lot.
So much. And it's all so exciting and I can't wait. And I'm just like counting down the days. I'm just so fired up with all the work we're going to be doing, all the collaborations we're going to be doing. And it would just be so nice to get like some audience members involved. Like if everything goes as planned, crossing all thumbs with my very long nails, crossing everything. If everything goes as planned, then I mean, we can literally have like live sessions and invite some audience members to come and like literally chill with us while we do the show. Like,
absolutely.
I can be sitting right there in the studio looking at Sanele and freaking Congo Chris and whoever else wants to come down, just like looking right there at them laughing. I mean, it's just so exciting. It's just like a nice new approach that, I think is going to be quite historic.
So speaking of new approaches, not a day goes by where you can't talk about load shedding, and we have to, unfortunately. It's something everybody is thinking about. It's something that everybody, when you sit down with people now, just like usually, you know, people talk about traffic or the weather or some other banal subject. Now you can't help but sitting down with people, and whether it's at a meeting, lunch, drinks, in the queue at Home Affairs, at the gym, all anybody's talking about is load shedding. So here's a little update. Apparently, according to Business Tech, South Africa's National Energy Crisis Committee, which has been opened by the Office of the President, expects record power outages to ease as measures are put in place, including a new law to fast-track plant development. So, apparently, we can be excited. 14 generators are set to return to service today, which I suppose is good news. Let's hope that means we can get off stage 5 or 6 or whatever we're on. But apparently this committee has told business and labor leaders about a range of interventions that have been made at a time when South Africans are enduring blackouts as much as 12 hours a day. As these measures take effect, the supply of electricity will significantly improve. The office, which is known as NECOM, N-E-C-O-M, put a presentation together and they showed this from the president's office. They faced sharp criticism, no kidding, after power cuts were imposed for 205 days last year and every day in 2023 so far. He cancelled his trip to the World Economic Forum in Davos, the president, to hold crisis talks with power utility Eskom. So the measures include the first of more than 100 privately owned power plants being developed will connect to the grid by the end of this year. In total, the planned projects could produce 9,000 megawatts, much of it for the company's own use. Emergency legislation is being developed to allow faster approval and development of power plants. Contracts for the construction of plants that will produce 2,800 megawatts of renewable energy have been signed and construction will begin. As much as 1,000 megawatts will be imported this year from neighboring countries. Eskom will buy 1,000 megawatts of excess energy from private producers who already have facilities. 6 of their 14 coal-fired power stations have been identified with particular focus in a bid to get them to perform more reliably. And efforts to finish incomplete plants and maintenance of other major units are being made. Now, shouldn't they also have, as part of this, massive sweeping arrests of people who sabotage electricity infrastructure? So cable thieves, people who are using tools to damage the power plants themselves so that they can get the maintenance contracts on them, all those things. Those people must be arrested and thrown in jail without trial for the next 2 years. That'll stop.
Let them start with themselves before they go out there and arrest the cable thieves. Let them start with themselves. I'm hearing you saying, yeah, you know, they've approved the building and the what. These tenders or these people that are going to actually be a part of the construction and the blah, blah, blah. Like, who are they? You know, cause from, you're only as good as your last rodeo. And from the previous rodeos, people are giving their cousins and their uncles and their aunts these things. Are these people qualified to build these power stations? Let's start there. So go about it, but start by arresting yourselves because you guys know that you're corrupt. After that, then you can start arresting the cable thieves and whatnot, whatnot.
Right.
This sounds like a great plan. I mean, talk is cheap and they've been talking, but I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm tired of hearing what you guys are going to do or what you think you want to do or what you want to try. Do the damn thing, execute it, and then we'll see. If we can see that there'll no longer be any load shedding, then we can clap our hands and say, sure, you did it. You did it, Joe. Get yourself a balls. But as of now, telling us your plans will not motivate anyone. We are in the dark for a minimum of 8 hours a day.
There's the Afrikaans word for this. Gatvol.
Gatvol.
South Africans are gatvol.
Emphasis on gat. Yeah. We tired, bro. We tired.
Also, if you find people are stealing power, cut them off. If they haven't paid like that guy said that we played earlier, cut them off. Right?
Hey.
There's no time for this. We don't. If someone's not paying and you are paying, you get the electricity. They don't. Full stop. Right?
The end. The end.
Thank you very much.
And there's trucks and trucks and trucks of coal traveling day in, day out, going to the harbors in KZN or wherever they
are. Sending our coal elsewhere.
Sending all the coal is leaving the country to power other countries so that they can be good. But we must just, you know, get the crumbs, which is like 4 hours of light a day.
Mm-hmm.
Calm the fuck on. No, man. Respect us. Respect us. Are you going to be joining any of the protests, Gareth? Let's go, bro.
No.
Let's go.
You know, I said this on the show yesterday. I'm not a protest guy.
Let's march to Luthuli and do something. Let's march to, yes. No. Megawatt Park is right up the road. Let's go. Cliff Central, unite.
Well, Congo Chris says, a reminder that a minister sold off all South Africa's strategic diesel supply at a third of the contemporaneous market value in 2014. That's the same year we bought rocks from the Guptas as fake coal. Yeah, that minister must go to jail.
Yeah.
Jail.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Lynn Brown who did that? I think it was Lynn Brown. To jail. Why is she? South I don't Africa know. She's probably retired, living nicely somewhere. Looking soft at the sea, getting her groceries still sponsored by the government. Maybe we're even still paying for her. Jail.
Mm.
For having essentially stolen our own diesel out from under us.
Right? We are a sacrificial lamb. Let it be known, South Africa is one big sacrificial lamb. That's it.
Vutzako says, Solidaritate says, triple BEE. Adds a premium, costs Eskom $13 billion per year, causing the tariff increases, etc. Scrap it. Scrap it. Mm. Right now, South Africans care more about having electricity than they care about any of these political plans. Just scrap it. It's enough. We've seen it doesn't work. All over where it's been tried, it's a disaster. Nobody benefits but the tiniest, tiniest group of connected caders.
Mm.
Everyone else.
All 10 of them.
All 10 of them, and they get all the money. There are no.
And we also, the rest of us still suffer.
There are no new black businesses that are getting handouts or help from government. None. They have to stand on their own two feet. They get nothing from these guys. And the few connected caders are getting everything. So scrap it. It's a disaster. And it's not even controversial to say that anymore. You can't find people who support triple BEE the way that it was meant to go ahead is a whole different thing to how it is going ahead. So that's a very good point.
How they planned it, like the theory and how they put it on paper versus like the practice and how it actually happened.
No.
We can actually go back to the drawing board. Mm-hmm. It's okay to admit that. Mm-hmm. It truly, truly is.
Don't tell me they're going to buy back all the electricity they sell to Namibia and Botswana. Maybe first stop selling it to them and supply your own people first. Well, I don't know. Again, I'm not sure because somebody sent me a thing yesterday that all our neighboring countries don't have load shedding. Now, I know for a fact that Zimbabwe do. They have massive power problems. Now, if we are supplying to Botswana, Namibia, whoever else, and we don't have enough for ourselves, this is like leadership 101. First, make sure that your own children are fed before you start worrying about like being a giver to the neighborhood. Like you have to look after your own people first, especially because these people are the ones who are paying your taxes. We're the ones who voted in the last election. Namibia and Botswana did not. And if they have some deal with you, you can cancel that deal right now and do it once you have enough power to supply to them, if that's true. If it isn't true, if we're not supplying all those other countries with electricity and they've got their own supply, cool. Then this is not even a discussion. Anyway,
They sold us long ago, dude.
Not one orange jumpsuit issued. Yeah, that's what really irritates me. I just want to see some people.
And it won't be. Nobody's being accountable for this.
Jail.
It won't be. Sadly.
Jail. Someone says the woman who is in question is Tina Jumat Peterson. She could also be the one who was responsible for selling the diesel. I'm not sure. It was either her or Lynn Brown, one of the two of them. The Eskom border about as useful as tits on a man, says Ginger Winger. Yes. Sianda says, can't we perform a citizen's arrest on all these dirty politicians? Well, I must tell you, when I see people, like I drove past Eskom's HQ yesterday on my way into a meeting. And as I drove past, I saw someone in a pretty nice looking BMW turning into Eskom's main gate. And I thought, if I recognize you, if you're one of those assholes that I've seen on TV trying to explain this shit away, I won't feel bad about going up to your window, knocking on your window and saying, hey, asshole, I just want to tell you, I hate you. The whole country hates you. We really hope bad things happen to you and you'll deserve them. And I mean, I think we've got to make these people feel like they've fucked up so badly that we will actually not allow them to eat at fancy restaurants next to us.
The problem is like they don't fear us.
They don't fear us.
They're disrespecting us and they know that we're not going to do anything about it.
Yeah.
All we're going to do is sit and tweet all day. How could they? Let's protest. Let's do this. Hop on your board. No, fuck you. But they know in terms of executing, we're going to sit on our fat asses and keep it moving. So until we actually like unite for real, and just take the bull by the horns, then only they'll say, okay, sorry, well, guys, our bad.
I'm sorry.
We'll just let them get away with crap.
I said we weren't, I said this last week already, we weren't going to talk about load shedding, but you can't avoid it. And I'm afraid tomorrow for the burning platform, it is the thing that everybody wants to know. The whole reason we're talking about it now is because I had to go through Cyril's new plan to like deal with this. And I wanted you to know what it was. So I'm just trying to keep you informed. I promise. I'm not sitting there going, ooh, let me bore everybody to death with load shedding again. Promise. That's all. All right. Let's get to this thing. I want you to hear from LJ Fenter. Let's turn our attentions just north of us into the Central African Republic. It's a long way from here, but it's also the place where South Africa recently deployed troops in an absolutely terrifying and probably one of the bravest stands that our soldiers have taken in certainly the last 20 years of South Africa's military history. It's an interesting story all on its own, but there's a whole lot going on in the CAR that we don't know about and that is not being reported widely, mostly because nobody can get in and nobody can get out. The airports and landing strips in the CAR are all being run by a group called the Wagner Group, which is a mercenary group that is under contract from Russia and that is doing everything it can to get in the way of any kind of government and people interaction. And also the AU, completely silent on this, the UN, completely silent on this. But listen to a man who actually knows what he's talking about. His name is LJ Fenter. I spoke to him just a little while ago about his latest book, which also details all of his amazing adventures in all these conflict zones. But he's just got back from the CAR, and he has some things to show us and some things to tell us. So I want you to watch this on YouTube if you can, because we've got pictures and little bits of information that are visual. But if you can't, I do describe what's going on there as well. So take a listen. Here it is, LJ Fenter, Garrett's guests, and our special guest for this week on cliffcentral.com. We'll see you tomorrow live at 6 a.m., bright and early. This was recorded last week, first time it's been played out, so you get the exclusive if you're listening to us right now. many of us are completely and perhaps blissfully ignorant of what is going on here on our own continent. The international community is maybe familiar with the activities of the Moscow-run Wagner Group, which is an exploitative military force that's currently active in several African countries, among them the Central African Republic, Mali, Burkina Faso, parts of Libya, and before that, Mozambique, which we know is still unstable. Their role, primarily economic, is to plunder all the natural resources, gold, diamonds, platinum, cobalt, raw minerals, rare minerals that are used in, you know, all kinds of technological applications. In the process, mines and raw resources are being taken over by force, and any opposition is summarily dealt with no questions asked. In the process, the Russians have integrated and ingratiated themselves with the governments in those countries in power, you know, in various ways, shapes, and forms, just as they've done in Bangui, which is the first place that they got this right, Bamako as well, gradually supplanting the law and order with military force and killing those people who stand in their way, even suspected of opposing their will. In the process, countries and large communities have been subjugated. The West has yet to raise its voice in protest, even though there are tens of thousands of United Nations troops that are serving in these places as peacekeepers. The irony here is that, simply put, there is no peace to keep because both states are at war in this case. Questioned about their silence in the face of this brutal aggression, most UN officials who are serving in these countries declare that the interference from their side in internal affairs of the nations where they're based is not part of their mandate, which raises the question, how much longer is the world going to allow these human rights transgressions to continue? More to the point, when are African nations themselves going to make a stand? Pretoria, it seems, has no comment to make. Here to tell us about this is South African foreign correspondent L.J. Venter, who has returned recently from the Central African Republic just a few weeks ago, having had personal experience of a Russian mercenary force that has virtually taken over in the CAR. So, Al, it's a great pleasure to welcome you back, and it's very great to have your firsthand experience here. We had you on my show just a short while ago with the release of your latest book. And, you know, I can't help thinking, the Central African Republic, isn't that where South Africa just recently lost some men? I say recently, but in the not-too-distant past.
Yes, about 10 years ago, and it was a hell of a battle. The country had been invaded from Chad and the Sudan Republic by an Islamic force who miscalculated badly in invading a country that was about 80-90% Christian or animist, and they weren't Muslim. And they went in, and in their move from the north to the south towards Bangui, the capital, they murdered what nobody knows, tens of thousands of people. And eventually these simple souls, good people that were living their lives, retaliated, and they now then started to murder Muslims in return. And of course they won the day. But the country, South Africa, was caught there with a peacekeeping force. It was a bunch of paratroopers, a fairly crack unit, and they were small in numbers. About 100, I imagine, or less than that. And they fought for 3 days. They fought really hard. They were caught in their own base, surrounded by what is estimated between 3,000 and 5,000 troops, and they battled them away. Now, in the middle of all this, the local commander, he's a colonel, and he was running out of ammunition, and he got some of his armored vehicles, and he raced to the airport where the French were encamped. They, too, were battling, and he said to them, I need ammunition. And the French commander said, sorry, haven't got any, bye-bye. And he said, okay, well, I'm pulling out of my unit, and you'll open the gates for me tonight with my men. And he said, woo, 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 how much ammunition do you need? Anyway, that was the end of that. He got his ammunition, they fought off, and then the rebels that would be fighting him stopped fighting him and said, look, our argument isn't with you, South Africans. Our argument is with the government.
Nonetheless, a heroic fight. And I mean, this is something that, unfortunately, despite their incredible heroism and their tenacity in a very, very uneven fight, I think most South Africans are blissfully unaware of this.
Yes, we lost 20 men. I'm not sure if it's 18 or 23. Those figures come to mind. But a lot of the boys were lost. And that was a really bad loss for us, the worst since the Second World War in a single battle.
That's alarming. It happened just a short while ago in historic terms. But more recently, we're thinking of Russian villainy in respect of what's going on in the Ukraine. It's happening much, much more close to home, and perhaps we should all be paying more attention to where it's happening here in Africa. Why are Russia quietly getting about their business, plundering resources and getting away with it on our doorstep?
Okay, they start very subtly. They move into a country like Mali, which is where they began, and they befriend the local government, and they make the point that the French, their former colonial masters, are busy colonizing them once again. And of course, things are not good. There's this insurrection going on. The economy is bad, and they have a willing ear from the ruling government, and they accentuate this by saying, listen, let us handle your security. And with the result that France has now pulled out completely from Mali, it's as also in the past few weeks pulled out of the Central African Republic. Burkina Faso, I think, is next. Guinea is heading that way as well. So obviously the tactics that are being used by Moscow with force handed out by the mercenary group Wagner is having an effect. The second point is that they expect to be paid for this. So they say, all right, well, we don't have to give us any money now, but we need some natural resources. You've got gold, you've got diamonds, you've got other minerals. We need to take some of those mines, and there's no argument. Okay, that's the next step. The third step is most of these leaders have come to power by a military coup d'etat, an army mutiny. And in the case of Central African Republic, there was an attempted coup last April. So the Russians say, well, look, this is not good enough. We don't want you to disappear because you're our friend and we're your friends. So we are going to place our mercenary, our Wagner group around your home and office as your protection. And without that, there's a possibility there might be another army mutiny. So, of course, this is accepted as within a very short time as a fait accompli. And it helps entrench the Russians in these countries. So they then say, okay, well, now we'll deal with the insurgency. And they go out, and anybody that's even suspected, they go far and wide, and they ask questions. They've got their own spies. Somebody has been talking to a rebel group. That entire village disappears off the face of the map.
You said
that is happening consistently in Mali.
You said to me that if they so much as find an AK-47 bullet,
a single AK,
they will torch the entire village.
Well, they find the AK bullet. Okay, this is, who knows, somebody's been through there. They dropped a bullet or whatever it is, or a casing. And therefore, this community must be guilty of having associated with the jihadist rebels. Now, it's actually quite simple. Either you're a jihadist or you're a normal Muslim. But if you are entrenched in a situation where you are murdering ordinary people who are Muslim because of suspected dealings with rebels, the entire community, it doesn't take them very long to become alarmed about who's next. And as it is, the number of people killed in Mali now must be running into more than 10,000, maybe even 20,000. Nobody's prepared to say. And the United Nations has 16,000 troops in Mali. They're in various camps. Their role is there, as you mentioned earlier on, peacekeepers. They do nothing. They go along a convoy escort, roadblock or whatever. But if you and I are walking within 100 meters or 200 meters of one of these United Nations bases and we're attacked, they're not going to lift a finger. That's your problem.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, the United Nations and all of its various peacekeeping forces across the continent serve as no more than window dressing in much of that anyway, and a probably just a bureaucratic way of showing that someone is at least attempting to seem like the good guys in a situation where they're doing absolutely nothing. Now, frightening as that is, you mentioned this Wagner group. Tell me about who these people are, these mercenaries, and you know, how did they come to be Russia's paid soldiers here in Africa doing their bidding?
Well, the boss of the Wagner group is the former cook, Putin's former cook, who's moved up the scale and is today one of the most powerful force figures within Russia itself. He is, some are saying he's out of hand. And there are members of the Russian army who are totally opposed to him because he's cocky. He created a group of what he called soldiers, but he had to call them mercenaries because the regular army was opposed to that was their domain. So he called them mercenaries, and he recruited them where they could. And if there was trouble somewhere, Putin would call on this man to go and send these guys in to squash. And they did it with a brutal efficacy that is beyond compare. They tried the same, by the way, and this is important to South Africa. They tried the same in Mozambique. In 2019, that's 3 years ago, the rebels, the Jihadist rebels, had come through from Tanzania into northern Mozambique, the Cabo Delgado province, which is quite a big news at the time.
Yes.
So Putin said, all right, this is an incredibly wealthy area for natural gases. It is one of the world's prime potential sources. And all the big names are in there, the Exxon Mobil, the French, you name it, they're in there. But the rebels took over and they started killing and drove these companies into exile. Russia decided, okay, it's going to lend a hand. So the Wagner group arrived in the biggest air force, biggest air base in the country, south of the border, in the Antonov 124s. And they arrived with helicopter gunships, armored vehicles, electronic equipment, sensing, you name it. They arrived, about 200, went north to tackle the enemy. Well, the first thing they did was to start knocking heads together, and these heads were Muslim. Because the enemy was Muslim, the local Muslim people had to know what the hell was going on. You don't do that, because if you're going to be fighting a war in an African state, you need intelligence. And if you alienate your single source of intelligence, you're going to have a problem. And that's what they did, with the result that there was no intelligence coming in. The Muslim enemy knew beforehand where the Russians were going and what they were doing, and they ambushed them. And the figures are disputed, but the latest figure I heard was that altogether 16 Russians were ambushed and murdered, and in a very brutal way, by the way. Some of their heads were shoved on spikes. So then after 4 months, the entire Russian force pulled up sticks, went back south, got in their Antonovs, and went home. So the moral of that story is that these Wagner group people are incredibly good at killing civilians, unarmed people especially. But when it comes to a good old fist fight and conflict in the jungles or in the desert, man to man, they're not. And okay. This is borne out by in Libya as well. Not in the past year, they've been put on the run there as well. So their track record as fighters is suspect.
So Al, it's clear that this is just a new kind of colonization, and you know, colonialism and colonization has come under justifiable criticism, and there are a lot of historical revisionists who've considered this to be a very ugly chapter in the history of the world, let alone Africa. But this is a new form of colonialism. And
well, let me explain. Let me interrupt you at this point on the colonial thing.
Yes.
Central African Republic, the Russians today control the government from top to bottom. The army is under Russian leadership. Yes. Wagner Group is running the security of the nation. The security forces, their intelligence, their airports, the convoys from the north. Everything is run by Russians. And the so president of the country is surrounded by troops.
It's not even a colony. It's a vassal state, effectively.
it's effectively there's a word for it, I forget, you know, it's been subjugated. And there's nobody does a damn thing about it.
So, you know, do the people of the Central African Republic have any means to resist this kind of thing? We know about some of these religious conflictual issues that are taking place there. Who are these government people who've been so completely bamboozled and paid off and offered protection in order to sell their country wholesale to the Russians?
Well, it starts with the president, and they've got the entire cabinet under their command as well. So if they want a particular area, which mining at the moment, they walk in and take it, and they're given full permission to do so. If you and I cannot go into the country without a valid visa, which is issued, which is not issued to tourists, tourists are prohibited. And if you don't have, as I had in getting in there, a United Nations document to allow me access to the unit to which I was embedded, I couldn't have got in either. And they were very unhappy with my presence because I asked questions about it, and I was embarrassing the UN command there for a while because I wanted to go to the headquarters of the Wagner Group, and they said they looked after me very well. Everywhere I went, I had 3 or 4 armored vehicles with 8 to 12 bodyguards, and I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. This is a serious problem. I said to them, I'd been there in 2019, that's 3 years before. And then in those days, it was also quite bad, also lots of security, but we could take an escort and go and have dinner at one of the posh restaurants in town. Surprisingly, there are still a few posh restaurants. There were a few. Now, with everything closed down at sunset, you can't even go to town after dark, is it? It's just all closed up. So I don't know what's happening to these people. They don't control anything, not even trade. The Russians tell the local traders who they can trade with.
Wow.
And that includes all the hardwoods that are coming out of the forest, incredibly some of the most beautiful forests in the world, from one horizon to another.
So just explain this picture to us, because it appears this is either the president or some sort of...
That's the president.
That's the president, and these people who are guarding him in the camo gear.
That's Wagner Group.
These are Wagner Group.
He does nothing without being surrounded without Wagner Group. And you see more Wagner Group in the background. Not all of them are armed because they like to make themselves look like the good guys. But what you see is only a small proportion of the actual numbers that are there that are present at any one time. And that applies to the few times that he ever goes into the city and that you see his picture on television or whatever. He's isolated because, as I said, there was a coup d'etat in April. There's going to be another coup d'etat one of these days. But with the Wagner Group entrenched as they are, they're very difficult. An interesting thing here is that every time that the Wagner Group expands into another area, they take with them a lot of weapons, including artillery and explosives. Mm-hmm. And there's stockpile there in case of another coup d'etat so that they can retaliate from various directions. So it's going to be difficult to overthrow that government. It'll be easier to overthrow the Mali government because there's so much dissension within the forces in authority.
So, I mean, essentially when you were there, despite being given this protection that you just told us about, you were doing no favors for the UN because they look silly. By, you know, you telling this story, they look kind of effete and incompetent. And, of course, you are in trouble with the Russians because they don't want you talking about what they're really doing over there either. How stretched are Russia, considering especially their involvement in Ukraine at the moment and how much of their overall resources that's drawing?
Well, I interviewed both the force commander and his deputy force commander. They are both United Nations people. And one of them, I won't say which one, because one has gone and one has remained, indicated the arrival almost every day of flights by Antonov 124s, which is an incredibly large, it's probably the largest military freight plane in the world. And it's coming in every other day, three or four times a week, with mining supplies, on an enormous scale. He was shocked. I said to the force commander, I said, how many mines are there in the Central African Republic? And he smiled and he said, you will not be able to count them. There are that many, which indicates an enormous level of wealth, natural wealth, that is being taken out. These planes come in with these heavy mining equipment. New mines are being set up on a scale equivalent to what is going on in South Africa in places historically. Mm-hmm. And they're taking out the resources needed for the wealth. And also, well, diamonds don't make a big supply. Oh. But
I mean, the only thing historically that I could even compare this to is Leopold in the Congo. I mean, it sounds as bad as him with the rubber and, you know, cutting people's hands off if they didn't bring enough home.
It's the same thing. I said that in Taka Taka Bomb Bomb. You know, the it's blatant racism. And this is the astonishing aspect, is that we haven't heard a word of dissent from any of the African states. And they could be next.
Not even South Africa, who are supposedly, you know, such a power player at the AU. Has the AU said anything?
No. Well, it's the African Union has sort of avoided this issue. But how much longer can they avoid it because of the brutality that's taking place? You see, it's AU is represented by governments. And the governments, that's the, including the Central African Republic and Mali, their representatives are there. They're not making a fuss, so nobody takes any notice. But you essentially are one of the first to highlight this iniquitous situation. And it's just as well we are, because somebody's got to say something. Now, we talked about the United Nations in Central African Republic. I must add a word there, because I was seconded to a crack Portuguese paratroop unit, the paracadistas, only 180 of them, but of the best fighting force that I've ever been with, and I've been covering wars for 50 years. All young, all dynamic, incredibly well motivated. If there's a problem in the country, the UN commander has enough sense to send them out to sort things out, and they've done so repeatedly. This is an example, that photograph there, of the sort of opposition they meet. When they set out, they are ambushed all along the way. And this peculiar thing about it all, and I checked this yesterday, is that they've been there now for 5 years, and they haven't had a single fatality. They've been ambushed goodness knows how many times. They've had a couple of guys wounded, and they go into areas that are so remote that there's no helicopter airlift capability in regions where they planes go in singly, which is a danger in itself in case of malfunction, mechanical malfunction.
It's absolutely astonishing to think about the scale of this plunder. You know, these mines are just one part of it. You mentioned the hardwoods as well. But the people are bearing an enormous brunt. You know, the humanitarian cost here is, for these countries, probably the most devastating part of this. Do you think that there will be a chapter of history written one day and fingers pointed at people who just seem to turn a blind eye, leaders of this country, the Russians themselves, these mercenary groups, the rest of Africa for keeping shtum? I mean, there's a lot of blame that will be passed around one day when the bodies are counted. Don't you think that that's something that people are thinking about at all?
Not at this point, because there is an insurgency going on in that country and in Mali and in Burkina Faso. It's hedging towards Ivory Coast, Ghana. And these countries need security forces, and the Russians are helping them. So they're not going to interfere with the Russian efforts at stopping the insurgency, and it's especially severe in the Central African Republic because the rebels are active and there's no shortage of recruits. They come through from Chad, all Muslim, and Sudan, and it's a continual pattern. They wiped out in some areas, they replaced very soon. As we speak right now, one of the troops that I spoke to said to me that as we speak, there are groups of young men coming in through across the border unmarked from Sudan and from Chad to fill the gaps of people that have been killed. So there's no stopping it, because with a massive unemployment, you have any number of recruits, And the Russians know this, so that's one of the reasons why they killed with abandon. Somebody's going to record the situation, well, I'm trying.
You're the only one who's doing it, by the looks of things.
Yeah, for now. Of course, you can't. The journalists can't get in.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you mentioned earlier that if you didn't have the contacts that you had and you weren't chaperoned along the way by the kind of protection that you have, there's just no way for ordinary people, especially journalists who are going sniffing around, to even have the chance to get into these places.
Well, there's some terrible stories about guys, young people, students, and we've seen it in the past, in Europe or America, wanting to travel across Africa, and they come across that border from the Cameroons, for argument's sake, and they don't have a visa, so they say, well, we'll smuggle ourselves through to the Congo. Well, they're arrested, and there are people in jail there now that have been who knows for how long. Quite a few people have disappeared. As for journalists, well, you don't ask questions. The Russians themselves were interested in what Wagner Group were doing. So in 2018, they sent a three-man television team to the Central African Republic, and they nosed around. They started taking photographs. They went to the headquarters. They spoke to the leaders. And then they were invited to meet one of the rebel groups in the jungle, and they were taken there in the evening. And their bodies were found several days later. A big scandal in Russia, really big scandal. So there was an investigation, and what emerged was that they had been lured, and the people that killed them were white. And we don't have to think very far ahead as to whether that was Wagner Group or not.
So, Al, power abhors a vacuum, and in places like Mali, where the French are now exiting, and obviously
gone.
They're gone. So when there's this vacuum, this is being filled at the moment by Russia. If they cannot sustain that, it all collapses again. What does that mean for Russia if one country that they're trying to plunder and subjugate the way that you've described, if one of them fails and collapses, does that mean all of them will, like dominoes?
Okay, I'll go back to Mali. Mali is the biggest mistake that the Russians have made in Africa. The French left in a haste. They took with them most of their aircraft. I think there's still a few aircraft around, but all their forces have left. Followed this morning's news, they've listed all the European countries that are pulling out as well. Britain taking with them their Chinook heavy lift helicopters, which are vital for moving troops. The Germans, the Italians, you name it, all the Western forces, Canadians, are pulling out of Mali. Now, Russia has to fill that gap if it's going to continue fighting the war. It's already under pressure in the Ukraine. It's sending in more Wagner troops, but they are really they're needed in Ukraine. And also, they don't have the mechanics. They don't have the wherewithal, aircraft, ground vehicles, to replace what the French had taken out. So having alienated the bulk of the Muslim population, because it's a Muslim country, they're getting no support from the locals. And they're having to fight a war, the same war that the French were fighting and the British, with their limited resources. And they are not going to be able to handle it, because the entire nation is now turning against them. The only friends they have are sitting in Bamako, around the president's palace and around parliament. You can't go on the roads without a convoy. And that involves United Nations, who don't want to fight anyway. They'll send somebody along on a convoy trip, but we know what that's worth.
So, Al, you've been to so many different places. I'm just trying to, for those of us who don't have a context for the Central African Republic or for Mali, if you had to describe the worst places you've ever been, and you've been in plenty of horrible conflict zones. When we think of failed states, there's that failed state index that they publish every year. Where would you position these countries in terms of just how completely hollowed out the idea of any order at all happens to be? How anarchic are these places, with or without the Russians? And perhaps you can give us an idea of whether or not they're contributing either way.
Well, the French and the British former colonies, were very well ordered. They left both European nations left their colonial descendants with good infrastructures, and that has persisted. But with the incursions of Islamic forces, and that's basically the root cause of the problem that's coming through now, these countries aren't able to handle the situation on their own. And whereas the French was helping them, and they've been kicked out of some of them, or they've left voluntarily from some of them, they're not able to help us on their own, which assists the Russians. But the Russians don't have the wherewithal. They don't have, you know, the French had 5,000 well-trained troops in Mali. The same, they had quite a hefty force in Bamako until a few years ago. So what is left is a remnant of which the European community is trying to train. But that too is a failed source, because if you take one example, last year, top military man in Guinea attended an American training course for commanders. He went home, and the following morning launched his coup d'etat, which replaced him in power to what he is today. So you don't know who you're dealing with most of the time. They're all potentially anarchic. And of them all, the poorest and the saddest of the lot is Bangui. I cannot explain to you how pathetically poor those people are. They have next to nothing. And now they can't do business on their own. They've got to go through Russian middlemen, who, by the way, represent all the Asian countries that are taking the hardwood and so on. So it's a sort of a lost cause, and it's silent because the press, New York Times, still has to do a major feature on it. And so does the entire Fleet Street. Well, what's left, they've all moved on from Fleet Street, but you know what I'm getting at.
Well, thank goodness that you're able to tell us these stories now. So what is your prognosis? I mean, you've seen in your years in the field as a journalist, you've seen how these things play out. What do you foresee happening here if, let's say, Russia's luck improves in the Ukraine? And what do you see happening if Russia continues to lose territory and to lose men in the Ukraine? Do you think that will remove their focus from here, or is this a completely separate issue?
It is a completely separate issue, but they still need resources, and they don't have those resources. And that is what I said, they made a big mistake. Without those resources, they cannot hold Mali to start with. And the insurgencies, Islamic insurgencies, moving to such a scale that Ghana is now sending troops north towards Burkina Faso, and so is Togo, and so is the Ivory Coast, and so is Senegal. They're all alarmed, heavily alarmed, at the removal of the French. The French pulling out. They now have to look after their own affairs. So, of course, the Russians, these countries are now turning towards Britain and America and saying, hey, this is a catastrophe. We need help. So there's a change. Suddenly the West is going to have to become involved. And that is the theme that I'm working on a book right now, where this will be the next war for the younger generation, because everybody wants a piece of the African cake. There's a lot of it, but not on the terms that on Russia's lack of terms.
It's such a sad story because, you know, Africa's already emerged from, well, just got its head out of the water in terms of years and years of this kind of exploitation and plundering, and only to find themselves knee deep in it again with the Russians. And it seems to me that there isn't enough political will anywhere to prevent this. So Russia seems to, you know, do this within their own sphere of influence in Asia, but they're now also doing it here in Africa. And we were worried about the Chinese taking advantage of African resources and, you know, buying up and leveraging, giving money and taking as security things like ports and bridges and that kind of thing. It appears to me that this is almost a much bigger and much more deadly story, and people are just ignoring it.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. Unless something happens and the Americans are pulling their hair out of the sands, they have to take part. There's a lot of new training programs focused on Africa. An interesting thing here is that I went to the United States the previous October, and I crossed the border from Canada. And I was pulled aside by two security guys, and they said, may we talk to you, Mr. Fenter? I said, sure, but I said, my visa's in order, so what do you want to talk about? I said, no, you've just come out of Mali. I just come back from Bali that October, and
yes.
This was November. And you've just been into that war in Mali, and do you mind if you'll talk to us? So they took me into the back room, and for the next 2 hours, I debriefed them. Not senior people, but ordinary, good, solid security people. And they said to me, when I asked them, why? They said, because Washington is Africa blind. They're not interested. They're interested in what's happening in Russia and what's happening in China. They're putting Africa on the back burner. That's 18 months ago. That is now changing. But for it to change effectively, somebody has got to get to grips with Wagner Force. And that somebody could be private military companies. And I cannot stress that strongly enough, because a good fighting force of PMCs, private military companies, they stopped the war. They stopped 18 years of war in Angola. They did the same in Sierra Leone. They pulled the rebels. They pushed the rebels to the negotiating table. They did the same in Nigeria with Boko Haram. They lasted for 6 months before somebody pinched the money that was going to pay them, and they pulled out after 6 months. But in 6 months, they did more than the Nigerian Army and Air Force had done in 6 years. And a good, strong fighting force, aviation orientated, could tackle the Russians on their own ground and on their own terms. The problem, and I know these people because I've been to war with them, and they're all professional soldiers who've seen good service all over. Some of them are even fighting today in Ukraine. Their one argument is that even if they had helicopter gunships, they fear the modern weapons that Russia has at its disposal, and that is a bit of a problem. But operating clandestinely and hitting, coming across the borders from the south into Mali, for argument's sake, you need friendly neighbors. You could knock out some of their planes on the airstrips unexpected, because the Russians aren't the most organized fighting force in the world. And I mean, we have jolly good evidence of that in Ukraine right now. And I believe a solid private military force could tackle the Russians on their own ground that they've claimed now as their property.
So it can be done. It's just, will anyone have the political will to make it happen? So, Al, this is frightening. I know we've only scratched the surface, but I think to expose these kinds of things, and I marvel at you going into these places. You're unstoppable. The last time I spoke to you, it appeared to me that you had decided that these days of adventuring in dangerous places were maybe coming to an end, but here you are doing even more of it. I encourage everybody to follow your work, to read your books. You said you're working on a new one, and we will obviously keep in touch. And should you have any updates for us, I'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Maybe you want to consider coming with me into Central African Republic, because I can get us in. It'll be interesting.
I'd be all for it, as long as I'm not a hindrance and I don't get in the way, and you don't have to send one of those letters to my parents that I'm dead.
Well, we won't talk like that anyway.
There's no guarantees. No, that sounds very interesting, but please keep in touch. We definitely would like to hear any and all updates that you might get from your contacts there or your own trips into places like the CAR.
Thank you, Gareth. That's a pleasure.
Very good to see you, Al. Thank you.
CliffCentral.com.